Welcome to Infill, where we discuss local San Francisco politics and policy. Today we have two amazing new people. Yay! First, I'm going to introduce our newest sort of content producer, new employee at YIMBY, Joe Barros. Joe.
Hey, Laura. How's it going?
Yeah, a little less stilted. You're supposed to show that you can produce organic content.
And have emotion.
Yeah. Joe, talk.
Hey, my name's Joe Ravano Barros. I just joined YIMBY 3 weeks ago, and I'm excited to be here.
Cool. What were you doing kind of before that?
So I was working as a reporter for Mission Local, and I was doing that for 2 years, and that's kind of how I met everybody in this room, almost. Started reporting at the same time that YIMBY grew up as an organization, so it was really exciting to see the two of us come up together in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And as a reporter on the Mission, who would you say is the best affordable housing developer in the Mission?
I'm going to decline from taking sides. I'm an objective reporter still.
You're not objective anymore. Now you have to say Sam Moss.
I'll say that Sam served as an invaluable source for many housing stories.
He's on the board.
Full disclosure.
Now he's technically.
I feel like I just broke a board fiduciary.
I don't think we have any rules about board members not telling employees that they have to speak highly of them. And so also new to the team is Nicole Nabluzzi.
Hi. Oh, that's not as stinted, it's just awkward.
So Nicole is going to be doing really fun stuff, helping us fundraise so that we can hire more awesome people, and also helping us plan the YIMBY Gala, which I am so excited about. Nicole, talk about yourself.
So I decided to join YIMBY officially 2 weeks ago. I'm really excited to be here. I decided that it was my calling to be part of a sham developer organization. And this is exactly what I've been yearning for. So I misguidedly started working for Obamacare doing media. Then I accidentally started working for a progressive congressman. But then I realized at the end of the day, I really belonged in the developers' pockets. So that's what I'm here.
Welcome.
Here doing.
From one unpopular congressman.
I'm totally joking. I'm really excited to be here at YIMBY. In terms of the other campaigns that I've worked on that have had a lot of people and a lot of money, I've seen the most effective and pointed action here at YIMBY. And I'm excited to be a part of that. And I named myself Special Projects, which I don't think I even need to receive a paycheck with a name like Special Projects.
Well,
so
be careful.
It's pretty exciting. Just kidding. Yeah. I retract that, but I'm excited to be here.
I feel like I'm a terrible boss because I have made everyone come up with their own job titles.
Yeah, what is my title? I don't know yet.
I'm also content.
Producer, I don't want that at all.
The emotional core.
Yeah, you're the emotional
hashtag
core.
Hashtag content producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. And then also I've made everyone come up with job descriptions.
That is typically, as an employer, that is typically something you should probably have done.
Well, okay, so here's my logic. That we need to be hiring people, and I think this is advice for all organizers, is that like you need to hire people who are extremely passionate and who care. Like Nicole was volunteering with us for a long time. Like you need to hire people actually who know what the organization needs too. Like I don't know what we need to be doing all the time. I need to be hiring people who care probably equal to the amount that I do, sometimes even more than I do, and who can like craft what we should be doing as an organization. Yeah, so Joe, get ready.
Yeah, I'm so ready.
Tone it down, man. Jeez.
Cool. So now we're gonna pivot to another special guest, our friend Professor Jason McDaniel.
Hello. Welcome. I really appreciate using my actual job title.
Yeah, welcome.
Yes. And also Sam Moss is here.
Hi, everybody.
Our special friend.
Yeah.
So, to start us out, I wanted to sort of talk about the thing that Jason tells me sometimes not to talk about, which is our unofficial two-party system and the moderates and the progressives, which are titles he maybe wishes we didn't use. And because Jason's actually done a lot of research on this and sort of like understanding kind of the lay of the land and San Francisco politics and how this all should be in our minds. So Jason, take it away.
Well, I suppose I should say, like, as a professor of political science who focuses on cities and urban politics, you know, that's what informs my thinking about these things. And in my mind, you know, I've written about and thought about what it means to be progressive in the city, in San Francisco, and it is different, you know, but I think from city to city and place to place. But it became clear to me a while ago that I think the term moderates was being used often by progressives to talk about people who weren't them, right? As a way of helping to organize themselves and to create a group of people who they thought were against them, right? Because, you know, for a variety of reasons, you know, everybody sort of is liberal, right? And so that the term that's after those terms, progressive liberal, moderate liberal, was left off, right? And I just think that for a variety of reasons, which I can talk about, I think it's a, you know, kind of a bad idea to embrace a term that I think was somewhat created by progressives to talk about people who are their, you know, their opponents. And the other point of view is that I think it overemphasizes the importance of ideology in urban politics. I think progressives especially, but a lot of people in San Francisco politics, moderates as well, if you want to use the term, they think of politics here as an ideological spectrum, and that we're having a politics of ideas and conflict of ideas, and it's about, you know, the great theoretical debates and arguments, and that's not really what's going on. And so I think it's a mistake to somewhat embrace that term because it gives you an inaccurate understanding of what you're doing and how to make change, I think.
Yeah, so I often, when I'm being flip, I reach for the terms mods and progs mm-hmm. because they're not real words.
Right.
And I also like saying mods, like the mod style movement, which is very close to my heart.
I love that myself.
Right. And mod, like modernist, is how mm-hmm. I justify my own presence in the moderate mm-hmm. party, mm-hmm. though maybe we shouldn't be using these terms. Because I have to speak about, the question is for me as like an activist, do you spend time speaking about the reality of how people think about it, you know, or do I spend my time shaping the dialogue and shaping the discourse? And those are like, those are two different goals, I guess.
Right. Well, I think that can be interconnected. You know, like, I wouldn't say that just because I'm aware as an academic, you know, some of my ideas or research or findings or whatever may not be useful when it comes to actual, you know, politics. I just hope that...
But this stuff is.
Well, maybe. And I yeah. hope that if I can bring some understanding, you know, I'm not good at making change or organizing or, you know, doing activism. And so I sometimes hope that if I can give some sense of what I think is maybe actually going on, that it can help people, you know, form those goals. I'll say this in terms of the terms you use. If it's helpful to you as a way of organizing your team, right? If it gives people, if you feel like people, you know, find an attachment to that name, and that it's coherent, it makes sense to them, that it helps people understand the ideological and policy fights that you guys are engaging in, then use it. Right, I think that's what the progressive, the naming and defining of progressivism, and sometimes that provides problems for those people who consider themselves that. But the actively working to shape that, I think, does help them and help to organize them as a political team. Right, you know, enacting change and fighting for certain values. If you find the same way with mod or moderate, then go ahead and use it. Right, I don't know if in that case, then just I think recognize that it's not necessarily an ideological label. It's more of a grouping of coalition, you know, different groups and that sort of thing.
It does kind of like start, it like sets a tone too. I think if you're going to name something, you need to decide if you're doing it to round up your base or if you're doing it to, for lack of a better word, attack or argue with, you know, to the other side. That you, like you said, like progs needed a name for people who disagree with them.
Right.
You know, same with like YIMBY and NIMBY, right? Right? Like we name the people who are different, who disagree with us in a way to like broad brush stroke you know, the opposition, for right. lack of a better term.
And you know, we have to use language in a way that makes sense, but I would say that the difference between sort of YIMBY and NIMBY is that there's specific policy content,
uh-huh.
right? You're, mm-hmm. Now, the terms get fought over, and, you know, are they a YIMBY or whatever, and you know, is this person YIMBY because they support these policies or what have you, or but I think progressive and moderate can be somewhat problematic because I think it gives people different understandings because they're talking about different ideologies, mm-hmm. and then there might be fights that happen, and it becomes impossible to sort of create resolution and compromise when you're fighting over worldviews and values and ideas, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if you're talking about policies, right, and you can portray it as, you know, not zero sum or, you know, benefits to these groups and the benefits to the city as a whole, right, then you can create a process for policy and change. Whereas if you're just fighting about ideology, it tends to be just a conflict.
Yeah, so for me, it's like, when do I use the word mod? I use it pretty much only when I'm talking with other super insiders and people who mm-hmm. Are tracking sort of the entire playing field of local politics.
Mm-hmm. Certainly never with anyone that's not from San Francisco.
No. Yeah. No, because it's like completely inexplicable, especially since the most moderate person in San Francisco is a radical progressive anywhere else. Yeah.
So I think, you know, we could probably talk about what I think progressivism means in San Francisco as a way of then saying to yourselves, we can ask questions, what does it mean to be moderate, right? And I've talked about this before, but progressivism in general is a kind of coalition of some disparate groups, some that are about sort of anti-displacement is a key sort of faction or plank within a progressive worldview in San Francisco. It's often connected to egalitarian sort of civil rights or post-civil rights politics in terms of empowerment of communities of color, especially anti-displacement and empowerment of communities of color in San Francisco, I think, go quite well together. There's the environmental aspect of it, which has historically been about conservation and anti-pollution, you know, green spaces, anti-development, right, which is a huge core of that, right? And then there was the sort of labor union, you know, economic regulation, protectionism, encouraging organized labor, that sort of thing. I think those were the sort of core of what defined the progressive movement, and it really did come together as a movement because of the rise of sort of anti-development, anti-displacement politics, you know, into the 60s, into the 70s and 80s, right? And then it reached its, you know, height, I think, with the post, you know, dot-com boom era, right? And so I think that's a clear sense of what progressivism is. I hope that people who would consider themselves progressives mostly would agree with that, right? They could probably argue with a lot of that. But in general, I'm not trying to condemn when I say that. I think those are the sort of guiding, you know, organizing philosophies or groups or coalitions that form, you know, the progressive movement in San Francisco. What would you say then is moderate? And if you can't define it, then, or if you can, maybe it'll be helpful or maybe it won't be.
The mean thing I say about mods is everyone thinks I'm going to end the sentence, you know, the moderates, the thing that brings moderates together is that they're moderate. But then I joke, the thing that brings moderates together is that they're spineless little bitches. they're a collection of interest groups, you know.
Because they're interested in policies and benefits, not necessarily
yes.
ideological.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? And but also that kind of because they're interested in policies, they roll over when faced with even illogical ideology a lot of the time. I think it makes them bad fighters.
I find them to be more like they are self-interested. Like I find moderates. I just think I notice a lot more passion with progressive, self-proclaimed progressives on things that might not even really, like, that they're safe from a lot. Like, you know, you got a lot of progressives that own a home, that aren't at risk of being displaced, that are just super passionate about anti-displacement and enriching
right.
people of color. And, that and like and, you know, a lot of times in San Francisco, they're white. And I don't see, from my point of view, a lot of moderates that will go to bat for something that doesn't directly help them out personally.
So I think, I disagree with that somewhat, but in the sense of like, I think what you're getting at is there is a power of having these sort of larger purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yes.
And I think people are sincere in their ideological leanings in terms of, you know, if they think enough about that to identify themselves, they're generally sincere. And there's a power to that ideological purpose, those larger purposes that I think progressives in San Francisco use really well. Right, that sense of larger political fights that can mobilize people mm-hmm. towards local issues, right? And that's why I think defining it moderate doesn't really work because it's like, yay, we're moderate compared to that, right? And it's that's why I think the playing field, if you define it as progressive versus moderates, sort of will play into the hands of, if you think of it this way, of progressives, because they're saying you guys are just mealy-mouthed versions of us, right? Mm-hmm. That's not really what's going on. And so, at least I don't think so. And so I think it's about a orientation, you know, towards government and sort of business or economic activity, mm-hmm. right? That if you see those as like enemies or zero sum things that need to be, you know, that are mostly part of the problem versus governance, policy, compromise, pragmatism, that it's around, you know, yes, businesses, you know, we're not trying to end private property and overturn global capitalism. We're trying to have tax revenue and, you know, schools and policies and you know, fire and police and what have you, right? Versus, yes, we need investment. We need, you know, housing. We need, you know, more of our whatever, right? Jobs. It's an attitude, an orientation towards that I think is really the defining difference between progressives and moderates. And then I think that helps in terms of understanding some of the fights that go on and why you think, you know, that maybe moderates are more open to compromise is because they're identifying with perhaps, or more readily identifying, concrete benefits that they can say, all right, I'd rather have some of that than none of that.
Like, right? What? The Alliance for Jobs. And, like, I mean, that was created, that I think that people in San Francisco would say that's a moderate group.
Yeah, it's a moderate.
But it's like headed, I mean, it was originally headed by the local 261 labor union. Right. You know, and I feel like that runs afoul too.
And unions used to be very much part of the progressive side, yeah. But it's maybe not as much anymore.
No,
there's some splits within that.
Yeah, I mean, the building trades unions, they're always accused of being, mm-hmm. you know, pro-development, moderate, whereas like right. the SEIU wins the progressive award every year.
Right. Well, I mean, this is the thing, you know, so there's two parts, like what should we call the current coalitions? And mm-hmm. then for me, I think that the current coalitions, like, there's just too much weakness inside each of... They don't actually make sense as coalitions anymore, in my perspective. And I intend for them to continue to make less and less sense because I think we have to, in order to take the next step as a city, break them both in half and form a new coalition. And that, I mean, that's a long 5-10 year goal, mm-hmm. but I think... I mean, I see that what I would like the mobilizing energy to be out of a new party is there are people in the mod party who want the city to work, right? And then there are people in the progressive party who want the city to work for everyone. It's kind of, they have an equity perspective.
You're right there. You're giving them the thing. It's like, I think, you know, I think you're right to talk about the city working, but everybody, I think it's right to assume that everybody wants the city to be better for everybody as much as possible, right? Now, this is getting at something that's even harder for me to talk about, which is at its core, the problem with talking about this, you mentioned this earlier about like insiders, talking about insiders versus like, you know, people who are not insiders. People don't think ideologically. Most people, even people I think are insiders, don't think ideologically. Are one of the most enduring findings in political science, starting from 1964, a scholar found this, is that the vast majority, 90% of the people in the United States, and I think this applies at the local level as well, don't organize their thoughts and political preferences on the basis of ideology. They're not consistent in that regard. They do it with respect to social group connections, right? And by social group, the most predominant one that I think of is race. It's not the only one. Religion and, you know, you can think about occupational status and unions and you know, neighborhoods, whatever. But it's about social groupings, right? And so when you talk about breaking up coalitions, right? Well, okay, like, I think it's more about forming coalitions and thinking about how to do that, right? And the way form coalitions will change over time, and with an attention to the idea of the social groupings that people feel and leverage that, rather than fighting an ideological war.
As in what, just like
accurate.
Start a new group and leave the old one
behind? No, just leveraging, I think you guys have already done that. You guys have started, you know, new groups. I mean, the YIMBY movement is, I think, a new...
I did most of that work.
As we know, it's definitely white male Sam Moss that is the lead voice. But like that idea of new groups and finding allies, right? And understanding that the progressive coalition is that coalition of groups that are having certain social group attachments, right? And so that if you accede that they have a more morally righteous, you know,
no,
progressive
I don't
position,
see that.
Which is, if you do, if the idea of egalitarianism, they're more egalitarian than the mods, then I think you've lost.
No,
right?
No, but I think that both parties, though, have a section of them that doesn't care about things working.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, okay.
Parties,
so the factions, right, groupings of people mm-hmm. who sort of do things similarly. I don't know. What's that? Do we have a word that we want to be using?
I use factions and groups, but yeah.
Okay. Faction coalitions. I think both of them have a group of people who are completely indifferent to things working. Part of what I do as far as forming those coalitions is figuring out who are people who care about the results of the policies they're advocating for, and so therefore have kind of like a higher goal, and therefore we can work with because we can get there, and they want to come to, you know, there's more there because they have a goal. And then there are people who are sort of in an emotional place where they just feel the way they do. They're angry. They don't necessarily have goals that I can totally identify, or maybe they are unwilling to see me as a person who they could possibly, you know, do that work with.
Well, like, also, the story that you always tell about when you started Yimby was because you were mad about the people not wanting the, what, extra unit on the street or whatever?
Oh, yeah, everybody didn't want one. And I don't, actually, to this day, I don't know if those people are mods or progs, right?
Those terms
like,
don't mean anything.
Yeah,
they don't mean anything.
Right.
I mean, and especially this is why I think that the Progressive Party, to me, no longer makes sense as a coalition. And, you know, and I really want to hear all of the sort of ways. Like, to me, that the on land use, which is the number one issue in the city, the coalition that is sort of a bit more NIMBY is the Progressive Party. And that doesn't make any sense for progressive goals as stated with a lowercase p, progressive. And so to me that means...
But they think it does. Right, so
they do.
We're not going to get anywhere.
They truly believe
you're not
going
to get anywhere. You're thinking, well, you're really not doing what you think you are. You're really not abiding by your values, because I think it's important to think they know their values as much as you do, if not better, right? And so it's why do they support the policies they do, right? And then what can you do to either, you know, carve out some of their support from others, or maybe talk to them in their language.
Right.
You know, the term progressivism, it's changed a little bit, but I've told people for a long time, I remember talking to Brian and Sonia and you years ago, that one of the key weaknesses of the progressive coalition on the issue of housing is the environmental aspect of it.
Totally.
That a lot of their movement has not kept up with that change in what it meant to be pro-environment. Pro-environment was about anti-development, right? It became anti-development, but it was a green space, preservation, conservation.
Like
it was inherently
local
conservative.
Club.
Local Sierra Club is the perfect example. It was essentially a conservative, you know, semi-reactionary understanding of the environment, right? But that's changed. And environmentalism now, as you guys all know, and this is why it must frustrate you to argue with, you know, people about this, and, you know, like someone like the mayor of Berkeley who's, you know, embracing the Paris Accords, but then is one of the ultimate NIMBYs, right? It's this idea that it's about urbanism, and it's about global warming, and it's about greenhouse gases, and it's about transit, and it's about density. That is a way in which, if you think about it, not as ideological worldview that you're fighting, but rather coalitions of groups with different policy goals that are more strongly held or less strongly held, you can then use that and assume that their preferences are sincere, that they sincerely consider themselves environmental, you know, then you can talk to them on those grounds and maybe persuade them, maybe not.
Well, yeah. I don't know, because I look at, like, Seattle has, you know, their ability currently, and LA had a different experience with Prop S, that they were able to have a progressive YIMBY, right? That YIMBYism was allowed to live in and with and work with progressives in other cities. But in San Francisco, we've been blocked from that ability. And to me, that feels like a historical accident.
Yeah, when Jesse from Cambridge at the YIMBY Town was, you know, he runs a nonprofit affordable housing developer just like I do.
Yeah.
He was telling me how, like, the progressives and the, you know, kind, you know, it, like, he's like thanked a lot for being a YIMBY and building affordable housing, and, you know, like, people are writing letters saying that I should be fired for being pro YIMBY in public,
right?
You know, in San Francisco.
So these are about people. It's like accident of history, yes, but it's about particular processes in particular places and particular people, right? And so that's why I keep emphasizing the way in which the development of progressivism in San Francisco included that reaction against development and displacement, and merged with homeowners that were very much a part of the environment, consider themselves pro-environment, because that was a larger conversation that was going on. That connection is what gave the progressive movement a lot of its power, right? And so you've got, you know, ballot initiatives, limiting heights and limiting development in the Mission, and heights everywhere. And so you have that essential connection between NIMBY homeowners, right, and anti-displacement activists. That was the work of compromise and coalition building that went on, right, that has forged the progressive movement here. That didn't happen that way in most other places, right? Or if it did, it happened with less power, right? And so it's to think about it, engaging in a political battle, an ideological battle, is a self-defeating thing. You're not interested in you shouldn't be, perhaps, from my point of view, interested in that battle, right?
No, I have no interest in that battle.
And focus on the policy, right? Because...
Well, and that's why we identify as YIMBY rather than as
right. Mods. And so that's why I say don't talk about mods versus progs, because let them, you can redefine, if, no one's preventing you from being progressive here in San Francisco. Redefine the term, right? If you have sincere reasons, which you do, right, that you can make a claim for progressive claims that I've talked about, right? I think YIMBYism is very much a civil rights issue of our time in terms of equality and advancement of poor and racial minorities, especially more people living in San Francisco is better for us as a city, better for our country, better for reducing inequality, on and on, the things you guys know, right? Don't do it progs versus moderates. Do your policies, and if you're progressive, call yourself progressive. Right, and you have a claim to it in a sincere way, you know, you'll have an effect.
I like that. On a side note, I always like to point out that one of the most listed as progressive supervisors, Chris Daley, Aaron Peskin, and Tom Amiano, upzoned a third of our city in a grand bargain to downzone 2/3 of the city for homeowners.
Yes.
And they are like bastion heroes of the progressive movement. And every time I bring it up, people look at me like I peed in their soup.
Well, you know, one of the first times I had this kind of conversation when I first came from San Francisco, it was 2010-ish, you know, and I was on a panel at the Cal Academy nightlife event, and Peskin was there. He was stepping in for Supervisor Cohen, and I had never met him, but I knew who he was, and I was talking about the housing stuff. You know, this is, again, you know, 7 years ago at least, and or 6-7 years ago, and he talked about how he was all about, you know, more office space and upzoning a little bit. He didn't mention the other part of that, which is about downzoning the homeowner. And you see the connection there, right, between NIMBY homeowners, right? That's why I had some hope that he would come in and be someone that could be about making deals, and because he understands governance and he understands deal making. I've been somewhat disappointed. I haven't followed him that closely, that he's, you know, sort of been more obstructionist in that regard and more NIMBY in that regard. And I think it's a you know, it makes me sad, but it doesn't surprise me in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wonder if there's, like, when we are hard on politicians, and especially, obviously, when we're hard on politicians who are considered, you know, not in our faction, we get flack from people who say that there is an opportunity for us to be working with them in their coalition, but they cannot work with us.
We're so mean.
Yeah, when, you know, when we critique politicians they like. That, I mean, that's really, it's, you know, and they may say it in other ways, but they, you know, Nader Green's a perfect example of somebody who gave a lot of, he doesn't like the memes, you know, he doesn't, and that's fine, but I sort of wonder, you know, and I go back and forth, is there truth to that? Is us being, you know, feisty and calling politicians and other organizations when they are doing things that we think are not in the correct policy direction,
right,
and even doing it in a funny way,
right,
is that, does that make any coalition impossible? Was coalition always impossible? You know, and also, can you really not critique people when they do things that are the things that you disagree with?
Believe me, you should absolutely critique politicians and hold them accountable. That is literally what your job is.
Your,
and
yeah.
Your job's out. But
thank you,
know,
you Professor, yeah, for I validating.
Mean, no, I mean, like...
That's why we have
but,
on.
But I mean,
podcast
like,
over.
That's literally what I talk about interest groups nationally. That's what they do. People talk about lobbyists are the worst thing in the world, you know, and I give a lecture where I talk about what they're doing is in our system, groups are representatives. That you are political representatives, right? Whether, you know, the act of representation in a democracy, in the, you know, American democracy especially, is a huge part of that is the way in which interest groups are interacting with politicians, representing their members, whether the members know about it or not, right? Or whether they're part of the organization or not, you guys are representing a group of people, and you're, the way in which you interact with politicians is a huge part of that, right? And so absolutely hold them accountable and critique them when necessary, but, right, I do think that a group's credibility is all, it's really its main resources what it has. Its sense of credibility, its sense of being able to be, you know, dealing in good faith, good information. Interest groups, their main source of, their main resource is their credibility.
Credibility is a word that I feel like gets thrown out a lot like, you know, YIMBYs aren't credible, or, you know, they just can't organize, they just can't do this, they just can't do that. And I feel like I guess for me, as someone in affordable housing and that got, especially when Laura, Sonia, like when we were first starting, I got, like, you know, when people would call me and demand that I tone police you and shit. Right. And it would be like, you know, first off, like, that's the worst way to tone police you, is to try to tone police you, just for the record. But a thing I heard a lot in the beginning was that, yeah, but you just don't have any credibility. You just can't turn people out. You just can't do this. And I would always be like, well, look, we just started. You're 55, 60, 70 years old. When you were just starting out, did you have just an army of people at your beck and call? And I never found a lot of self-proclaimed progressives who were mad that I was, quote unquote, crossing some imaginary line, to be willing to even be introspective to the point where they would think back to that. Mm-hmm. It's like they'd come so far that it was impossible.
And so that's right. So I think you're absolutely right that I've seen this movement grow and become a real credible part of the city, of the politics in the city. And I think that is the organizing and the passion that you guys have been able to bring to that is again a huge part of your success so far, and a huge resource that you need to shepherd. But the way in which you also, the voices which you have, is part of that as well, right? And so it's there's no one answer. It's a case by case kind of situation, right? If you judge that a certain politician is, you know, perhaps hopeless, then I think that's never really quite the case. But if you judge that, then, you know, okay, right? Or if you judge that I'm more oriented towards being, you know, sort of respectful and you know, pragmatic and compromising. Others, though, are not. And I think sometimes that sense of being non-compromising and being hard and being, you know, memes and funny but fierce mobilizes people better, right? So, like, you know, students pay and sit in my lecture and fall asleep, but less so perhaps for you guys.
You know, credibility is an important thing. And, you know, there's two different kinds of credibility. The one is, like, can you get a ton of people out? And I think, like, what that ends up actually meaning for people is, are you a genuinely grassroots movement? Mm-hmm. Do you represent real human beings? Mm-hmm. And then the other kind of credibility is, like, you know, do you always say things in the tone that they find credible. But I also think that's a very ever-shifting...
Super subjective.
Not just tone, right? It's like, yeah. Part of it is, I feel like you guys are winning if they're trying to, like, get you to, you know, shut up.
The undermining of our credibility, I think, is the thing that is... I mean, that's why every time we get up to talk, people talk about saying all of these people were paid to be here by the developer. Because they know that their biggest... power is undermining our credibility.
Right, but again, the credibility is something you guys can control that as much as possible, right? I mean, whatever they say, right?
Like, as long as politicians understand that you are
not just firebomb throwers, you're not just gadflies, right? That you have sincere, you know, things to say, you represent sincere, you know, groups of people, right? That you have a sense of good faith dealing, and that you share values with them, you know, in the city, what have you, that they know that the information you give is not just, you know, slanted completely, right? And I think in my interactions with you guys, I think you guys have that. Whether you often have that in your meetings, I don't know, or in your interactions with other politicians, I don't know, right? I'm not there for that. But I do think you should, you know, think about it in terms of, if you, as a movement, as you're maturing, and I think you guys are, right, that, you know, perhaps then resisting the idea of falling back into bomb throwing might be something that you guys, a conversation you need to have.
I get mad and frustrated a lot when my industry, like, blames me for giving the YIMBY party credibility because for some reason I'm an affordable housing developer.
We already had it, Sam.
Agreed. I agree. This is the one time I'm not going to make a joke.
The theme of this podcast is how powerful Sam is.
The theme in all things is how powerful I am. But, I mean, it's true. Like that, doesn't that mean they're, like, insinuating that I am in this box that they created, which this other side needs to have for credibility?
You represent an organization that has credibility over time and you know, quasi-governmental sort of connections and what have you, that you do have credibility. And so it's the same conversation, you know, version of the same conversation we're having nationally, which is that, unfortunately, President Trump is giving credibility to these groups.
They
see... you know, I think incorrectly, of course, they saw or do see the YIMBY movement as a, you know, radical fringe, right, or a fake, you know, group that's, you know, astroturf from the developers. But of course, that's, I think, most serious politicians, if they still believe that, are deluding themselves, mm-hmm. right? The city, you guys have become an obviously
we've pushed credible policies through,
right? You know, in terms of mobilizing people and the way in which you're dealing with actual arguments and policies and your knowledge, right? You guys have demonstrated that. Don't shepherd that. Don't worry about fighting what they're saying. I mean, you have to fight a little bit, right? But don't worry about them undermining you. You guys have that resource. Shepherd it. Build it up, right? And think about it in the way in which you interact with whoever you interact with, whether mm-hmm. it's Twitter, Facebook, or you know, person, mm-hmm. right? Always be aware that you are representing not just yourselves, but a larger group, right? Of people who you are helping to organize and mobilize, but people who you don't even have never met before.
I think that's right? why it makes me mad and frustrated, is because I feel like that insinuates that a person can't learn, any tech worker, any union worker, whoever off the street that wants to come to a YIMBY party can't then educate themselves to the point where they have a viable opinion and can formulate rational, intelligent
right.
thoughts.
Well, you're right. And so what you're doing is, I mean, the people who make you mad and who criticize you for this stuff.
You make me mad.
Well, all the time. But I criticize you way...
I deserve it.
You know, too much, probably.
Yeah.
But still, they're threatened by, you know, the success and the change, oftentimes, that's perhaps happening in the city. That they're losing somewhat of a control over maybe what it means to be progressive in the city or what the way housing is in the city in the rooms that you're in, right? So it's natural. I think the key to shepherding your credibility is to maintain control as much as possible. I know this is hard for Sam. Over your anger, right? Or your feelings.
Very hard.
Over your feelings of like it's
a lot
like
of feelings.
You feel like you have good. These are good people. You want people to see that, right? Yeah. You want people to see in Sonia what you see, or Laura what you see, right? And I feel the same way, right? And so it's like you know, recognize. Yeah, they're gonna be upset. Try not to be upset at them because it's sort of natural they feel this way, right? And then say, well, that's not what I see. And then hopefully, you know, they'll be open to that in the future. And before you know it, somebody will be mayor, and they'll be like, "Wow!" Now here's the thing: they'll never give you the satisfaction of saying, "You know, I was wrong, and you were right." That's the problem.
And deep down, that's really what I want, and I know I'm never going to get. Yeah, no, you're right. That's good that you put it into words, because deep down, I want that person to be like, "I'm sorry, Sam." Well, I will say this: one shout out, Randy Shaw did tell me that I was right and he was wrong. It only took me like 2 years of arguing with him. So at this rate, I mean,
I'm good to go.
Yeah, no, and when he did it, I was, and I know this is hard to believe, speechless. I had nothing. I had no witty quip comeback.
It probably won't happen
speechless.
Again. You won't convince anybody else.
No, that's it. I'm out. Mic drop.
You know, finish on your head on that one. But my goal is, if you ever want to be nice to me, just tell me I'm right about everything.
I do think, though, that, like, to be fair to people who want to continue to play the teams, right? There's mm-hmm. a group of people who have an interest
they
in
thrive
the team.
On it, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, and like that's where they have either consciously or subconsciously they understand that that's where their power is coming from in the political mm-hmm. sphere, mm-hmm. and so maintaining the teams when it seems like we're undermining the teams mm-hmm. is something that they are correct to react quite with the level of hostility to it that mm-hmm. they do. I think there's an incentive for them to behave that way. And I do think that, like, when we were just saying we support affordable housing and we were, like, showing up for affordable housing, it was easier for them to say they don't really mean it and, like, though that didn't really make any sense, they still had the ability to, like, try and make it a thing. And I do think that, like, having you on the board and whatnot and being an active, you know, on the podcast and whatnot does create it solidifies that credibility. And I, you know, I think that you should be proud of that, but understand that it does put a target on your back.
You know, I get that.
Yeah.
Target has been realized for everyone out there in podcast land. I get it.
You know, and I don't blame the people who, I mean, blame, I don't know. I don't blame many people. I think that people have incentives to behave in the manner that they do.
Yeah. I mean, that letter that they wrote, while it was disconcerting to have my board get a handwritten or written letter saying I should be fired for being pro YIMBY in public.
I'm so sorry for saying that.
it was you, right? But, I mean, you know, after I calmed down, so like a week later, when I was finally calming down, I did step back and realize, like, we're doing things, right? Like, they're threatened to the point where they are trying to get me fired. You know, that's like taking away my livelihood and all those things. So,
and here's what I would say, though, and this is it kind of goes back to your earlier conversation, which is that it's still possible to see them as future allies.
Mm-hmm.
right?
As a group,
you know, interested in actual change, no matter, to try to avoid these kinds of fights where it's, politics is personal, and a lot of the people who you know, maybe get upset at legitimizing of Yimby groups, right? How you deal with them and feel like, well, I'll never be able to deal with them in the future. They maybe personally felt like you were somebody they couldn't work with, right? But you don't want to try to return that by feeling personally offended as well, mm-hmm. right? Because they're always going to be potential allies, okay. right? Mm-hmm. Peskin is a potential ally, right? Everybody is, right? And so that's how you should think about it. Expand, always being able to expand the playing field and appeal beyond the local current and groupings, right? And to be focused on actual change and how to make that towards, you know, strategically or what have you. That's the way in politics to always, you know, be flexible in terms of your positioning so that you can be open to future.
I mean, and I think we invite, I mean, no one's ever responded, but it's not like we don't invite right. Joe Fitz and Nato Green to come join us in Brisbane every single time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of two minds about it. Like, sometimes I feel like we're just being dicks by
like, you are. The okay, yeah. Literally.
Like, trolling.
Yeah, trolling yeah, them right. by yeah, saying, yeah, yeah. you know, over and over and over again, like, you could come. Or, like, you know, I mean, I'm harassing Nato at this point on Twitter, being like, when are we going to get that drink? When are we going to get that drink?
You know, I've had drinks with both of you before, so I could help to broker that if you'd like. I'd be happy to. But, you know, we can meet at, you know, Virgil's and, you know, have Tom be a part of it and have Joe show up and cover it as an event.
Oh, yeah, he's going to cave.
I actually think that kind of thing, I did a little, like, a personal version of that early on when I came here, as I realized I was getting involved in fights on Twitter, often about housing, and I said, you know, I'm going to stop doing that, because I realized these are my people. Like, you know, regardless of how maybe we fight on Twitter, like, these are, like, we're all the same kind of, you know, in many respects, have similar same values. And so I decided to become friends with people like Tom DiPrano and Joe and Nato and others, right? Because, you know, and it was usually over drinks, right? Because I think I was like, I value them as people more than I do my ability to be right on Twitter, right? And I try to give up that, you know, more or less successfully give up that idea, right? And it goes to one of the key things that I often return to when thinking about this ideological battle, is the way to win in San Francisco is to expand what it means to be a citizen of San Francisco, right? Both in terms of geography and time, right? Is that, and I think this is something that the Yimby movement has hit on, whether they're aware of it or not, which is that critiquing the idea that, you know, native San Francisco.
Because you've been here for 20 years, you have more say.
That you own a home, that you have more of a say, right? Because the progressive movement won in the 70s and 80s and 90s by expanding that sense of what it meant, the identity of being San Francisco and being worthy of protection and advancement by the policies and politics of San Francisco is a lot of how they won, right? In terms of in the areas in which they do win. I think you guys are doing that now. Right, it's this idea that the people who are not here but want to be here or need to be here, we will be better off if they're here, right? That is expanding what it means to be a citizen of San Francisco. To talk about, you know, people who want to be here but are driven away from it, right? That idea. To talk about how our transit and schools can be better, right? The idea of the power of that larger purpose of what San Francisco means. That is not necessarily ideological. That is about larger purposes and politics and policy, and movements win when they can appeal to that greater sense of the greater good in San Francisco. And I think you guys can do that.
And I would push that even further, saying, like, also broadening the geographic, what is San Francisco?
Right.
All
the
of
Bay
the
Area.
Community, the Bay Area. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like all of these ways
yeah.
that we are thinking about expanding.
Like Brisbane saying, you know, that they don't want to care about the housing crisis when they're like 4 miles away from San Francisco or whatever.
Yeah, it's a 15-minute drive from my house.
And frankly, that'll create opportunities for coalitions here, right? It's San Francisco against them, right? And there should be opportunities, maybe not, for people here to unite against that. Right.
I do think that outrage over more wealthy NIMBY towns has been kind of a unifying factor, mm-hmm. right? Jane Kim saying that we should annex Brisbane, mm-hmm. you know, like that is something that can be built on. But you know what I mean? Like that's.
I guess, but I'm of two minds about it because, like, I mean, I think we can get some headlines out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we can get a lot of practical movement out of it because the political, like, when the political boundaries are drawn small, you know, there's only a limited amount of you know, caravanning to other places and flag waving and whatnot, because like they're running for office here.
Yeah.
And so it, there's, I think there's an overwhelming structural incentive for them to be, for all of these things, the pressures to be only think about your town. I do think this is where state level, we're going to have to change the structure in order to permanently shift the perspective right. to be broader Bay Area community.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's what, I mean, you know, that's absolutely what's going to happen and is happening and hopefully will continue to happen both statewide and nationwide, right? But I do think there is elements of working with politicians together at one point might pay off down the
line. I mean, like Costa-Hawkins reform, what, 2 years ago when the government, when Jerry didn't sign the thing that got passed? You know, a bus got rented by the hack that had a ton of self-proclaimed progressives on it. Like, the mayor drove up there. Scott Weiner was a supervisor at the time, but like Aaron Peskin also went. You know, that was a, you just talk about state level stuff, like that was a unifying experience, and then we were all collectively frustrated together afterwards.
That's gonna happen, right?
But I wonder actually, like, it feels to me like that couldn't happen today. And I don't know if that's like, you know, it's maybe I've been too, like, it does not feel. And maybe because we are seen as so polarizing that my emotional experience of it is different than maybe other groups and factions, but it feels to me that there are so many people who have extreme preconceived notions about me and what and YIMBY and whatnot, to the point where it doesn't feel like we could all get in a bus
You might know more than I do, but I would say this, that, again, I'm somewhat distant from this, even though I'm here, is that, like, I feel like you guys have crossed the threshold to where, you know, I feel like I think it had a lot of it had to do, frankly, with the changing the election. So, like, and this is perhaps unfair, but, like, Avalos and Campos no longer being there. Like, they were sort of kind of vanguard, you know, a vanguard against that kind of thing. And that's pure speculation on my part. But the idea of now I hear people who are more affiliated with the progressive side being at least open or having defensive in a good way about having to consider you guys. You guys have proven, I think, your credibility in some respects, right? And so I think that, you know, and with Scott Weiner's success and David Chu's success, you know, at higher office, right, I think that there's room for you guys to you know, work on something, find something, you know, together that you can identify, whether it be a Costa-Hawkins reform or something, you know, a Brisbane kind of thing, to where you can at least reach out in a way that's sincere, not about making, you know, PR moves or whatever, and see what happens, right? It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I will continue to do that, and I want us to continue to do that.
Your goal is not to beat them.
No.
I mean, the animosity seems very, very high right now.
I guess
now.
That's
very,
but that doesn't mean, I mean, I just have to pretend I don't. Yeah. I mean, but I would say, like, the emotional cost, like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, it's hard to be in it and do what you want to do.
I mean,
every day.
Like, I think about the mission, like when the Mission Anti-Displacement Coalition got started with the first .com boom and Chris Daley against Willie Brown, like, those stories sound like people were hating each other violently.
And that hate,
you know,
still exists, right?
It still kind of permeates.
And it won't go away, but I do think there's something here. And again, you guys are on the front lines in ways that I'm not, right? And so I have empathy for that. But, you know, there is a power in sitting there, taking the hate, and reminding them that you love them. And I know that sounds incredibly hokey,
that sounds
right?
Hard.
But every civil rights movement has done for the past 50 years. Yeah.
We are San Francisco, you are San Francisco, we are the same, right?
Yeah.
And I get that. And I get your disagreement about this. I disagree, right? And standing there and taking it and not reflecting back, you know, any hatred or anger or emotions you get, if you can get to that point, and maybe I'm just a Vulcan and that's why I can do that perhaps, or maybe I just have not had to deal with it, if I actually had to deal with that and go crazy, but if you can get to that point, it's quite powerful. And in a political sense, I think Willie Brown never lets anybody bother him.
No.
Right?
Well.
As far as I've never met the man, but like, but that sense of like always being bigger than that is powerful, right? And it's hard, but if you can work on that, I think it helps in a political movement. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the times, it's, you know, it is hard. I mean, I try to live it, but, you know, like, I've had times when, like, I've felt like I was developing a friendship with someone, and then, you know, they've posted something on social media, and, like, it hurt in this way because I thought that we were building a friendship, And that it's, you know, it does, and it requires you to just decide to be emotionally vulnerable over and over and over again.
Well, right.
Or be a Vulcan. Like, or, that's right. Another, you right. know, well, I understand do that.
At a deep level, right, when people talk about politics, the way in which their mind works in terms of friends and not friends goes, it changes, right? And then they can say things. And so to understand if they really are friends, to be like, you know what, we can be friends, but we don't talk about this stuff. Right, or that, I know what you said, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you feel like you need to defend yourself, fine. But, like, you can say, like, you know, I still like them as a person, right? That even though they said
The fact that I still like them as a person is why it hurts.
Right, well, I get it. I'm not saying it's not hurt. But to understand that it's, like, politics is not, it's personal, but it's not friends, right? And I think San Francisco politics is so small in a way. It is about, you know, everybody's friends or enemies, right?
You mean like the side that disagrees? Because, I mean, my favorite
even
part...
Even when you're in Philly and Soul.
My favorite part about the Yimbies is that I find myself like 2, 3, 4 times a week in a room with like my best friends mm-hmm. drinking.
Right.
Which slash is... talking about politics.
I guarantee you.
I don't know. It's just like my friends.
The side's very similar, probably.
Yeah, no,
oh,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, without a doubt.
At least I hope they are.
I do too.
Maybe if they did it more, we would get along better.
Who do you think drinks more? The progressive times or the Yimby times?
Yimby's.
Yeah,
by far. Yeah. Are you eating?
Yeah.
Well, that's just because you guys get open bars that are paid for by all the developers.
Yeah, well, the developer shills pay for everything.
Barely. Unfortunately, your contributions are going towards a lot of alcohol.
I've had a few free drinks. If there's one thing that I would sort of lessen, that this is changing the subject a little bit, but that, you know, you guys, I think there's a lot of things you've said today, you think of a lot of what you're doing as all these interpersonal sort of debates and conflicts, and it feels that way, that's accurate, but what really matters is the process, right? You don't win in politics by winning arguments, you don't. And this is one thing I try to tell people. Politics is not really about policy and preferences. Just like it's not about ideology, it's not really about policy preferences, right? When I say it's about social group attachments, I mean that, like, arguing about policy and values won't change that, right? But political change, these arguments will still go on, right? But Willie Brown as mayor and, you know, Gavin Newsom and what have you, you make achievements through the process, and progressives have made their achievements mostly at the referendum ballot, you know, box, yeah. Right? By changing the process of development, right? And so you guys can still win in at the board, you know, mayor signing off at the ballot box, right? And fights were going to happen, right? Not to me personally, maybe if you can, but you're not going to change anybody's mind necessarily. I mean, we can talk about how, if you like some ideas about how, and I'm not saying give up on that, but it's always about the process, right? And the policy that you're trying to enact,
like God
not
willing,
about the argument.
Yeah, like God willing, if SB 35 passes at the state level, won't that be equivalent to that, right?
I mean,
that's us deciding that state level needs to have more authority because we're tired of arguing with local.
Exactly.
Nimbies.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, you know, what I say to everybody, I mean, I've joked about this. I say to every organizer, you don't need to win the argument with your opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You need to mobilize people
yeah.
who
mm-hmm.
agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a little bit talk to
mm-hmm.
the middle who okay. is sort of the undecided. You need to, like, talk enough to the undecided maybe to make them think you're awesome and come join. But your number one job is to mobilize people who already agree with you into action based on their already agreeing with you. In practice, I get into arguments with Alfonso on Reddit. So, like...
You've defended me, too, on Reddit.
I
appreciate that. I
know, right?
Yeah.
Because you're crazy.
Right. Yes. But then I'm like, well, actually, like, this job, like, you are selecting for, like, the only people who can be organizers are crazy people. Like, that is, like, you know, you can't... Nobody... This job, like,
I mean, you get beat, you get punched in the face, literally and figuratively, so much as an organizer that you have to have some semblance of mental.
Yeah. Like, it's literally the job you've signed up for. It's just like, why don't you just stop what you're doing, go out on the street, and get punched in the face?
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, are you sure you wouldn't rather go to lunch than go to City
right.
Hall at noon
just
to right. wait for 3 hours to speak for 2 minutes?
I am.
That sounds
sure.
awesome.
I mean, and this is the thing that's like makes me, like, it's the thing that makes it so that I keep. Go, you know, caring is the worst. I do not recommend it. But caring is what makes me go to Brisbane and sit there and like listen to this guy who told me that the people in the trailer park are happy where they are and we shouldn't do anything for those people because they have what they deserve and what they need. Right. And I was, you know, then the fact that like then I just cried, right, like that sucked. And it sucked, but I also know that if I didn't care at that level, I wouldn't be able to keep doing this. And so like the fact that I still want to engage with that guy and like get him to be different, like I can't kill off that part of me.
Right.
Here's the thing, like, and I'll say a psychological answer and I'll say a political science answer, right? The psychological answer is that I do think you're going to be hurt if you want to be liked by everybody, right? And part of you wants to change his mind because you want him to say, like, or whether like you or say that you're right or whatever. Right?
No, I want him to not be a terrible person.
Well, but that's...
Yeah.
It's a low bar right now.
You can't change
who you are.
Yeah, no, I know.
But, like, the goal should have been, and it probably was, like, to have an argument to the people who were making the decision there at the time. His argument doesn't matter, right? Like his argument is self-refuting, right?
But yeah, so this was in the parking lot afterwards. It was completely useless. There was no
perfect. Literally the perfect example.
There used to be a term for, like, don't let Laura, who's on Laura duty, don't let her have to go argue with somebody.
There is.
But is that your job, Sam? But anyway, so...
I've been on it.
I would say this though.
Don't argue in the parking lot. That's my advice.
That's our new sticker. That's the new Yimby slogan. Don't argue in the parking lot.
Well, Yimbys were no longer going to argue because we hate parking.
That is so 2016.
Ooh, yes,
we hate parking. We won't park. Argue. But so
luckily there were no decision makers around.
No, they voted not to vote.
And there was one very confused cop who was like, "What is going on here?"
Right.
Yeah, and he was just like, because he, in the later, at the funniest part of the story, I have to get this in here, is that he later on was like, so what is going on? Like, why are these old people yelling at the young people? What is going on? And Corey ended up talking with him and be like, oh, you know, Brisbane, they're like going to add this housing or not add this housing. And like, you know, do you live in Brisbane? And the cop responds like, hell no, I can't afford to live here.
A Brisbane cop.
A Brisbane cop.
Yeah.
Cannot afford to live in Brisbane. Yes. Hashtag so Brisbane.
Right, right.
Yes.
I would say, like, at the end on this, like, the political science part of this is that there is a lot of research, and this is a hard one, but how to persuade people is a really freaking... Mm-hmm. We used to think, and I mean 5 years ago, that almost every piece of research showed it was impossible to persuade people. That if you tried... For a variety of reasons, but if you tried, even you would risk increasing the disagreements, and it was a backfire effect. They were even stronger in their disagreements. There's been some research, more recent research, that has opened that up a little bit. That it is sometimes possible to persuade people, at least with short conversations that start with empathy, which, you know, and we get pushback on this at all a lot, but like showing some empathy for their point of view. Right? Doesn't mean you have to, you know, agree with them. And I get pushback on this when people say, well, why should we be empathetic to racists, right? And I'm not sure this would even work with racism and racial policy, but like on housing, right, showing empathy for a Yimby's concerns, right, at least then followed up by talking about your experiences. Not as a political person, but like, you know, sort of a personal conversation in a short way, not a long argument, right? Not about winning an argument. Right? I often say that the only way to persuade somebody is to not argue with them. Right, is that ask non-argumentative questions, empathize with them, and then try to find space for you to give your experience, your identity into the issue, right? And if you could do those things, you might get them to question their own point of view. You can't persuade them, I don't think, but you can get them to ask themselves questions so that the next time they might be open to a different point of view. I think that's all that can be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that guy who, on the racism one, there's the guy who befriends people in the KKK and has gotten, you know, he's this middle-aged black guy who sort of has made it his work to befriend people in the KKK and get them to not be racist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely noble work. And so, but then I think, you know, the amount of time that goes into getting one person to leave the KKK versus like moving legislation forward that could actually integrate our society, right? So how do you make that, like, well, time commitment?
It's
the
legislation. Like, look, people often have this problem, you know, with the civil rights movement. Like, a lot of people were like, well, we got that, so we don't need to talk about it anymore. A lot of, I think the predominant feeling about race in America is, amongst, you know, white people mostly, is that, well, we dealt with all that, and Obama was president, race isn't a problem, why are you talking about it? You're the racist.
Not this week.
Right?
Well, nobody's this week. Thinking that
right.
this week.
But here's the thing, when I said people don't have coherent, you know, policy positions and issues, right? They don't have consistent opinions from one day to the next necessarily, right? And so it's not the same as the KKK position. They're trying to change their identity in a way. You're trying to change somebody's position so that it doesn't matter if they change their position, so that when the housing thing comes, like, either the board passes it, right, or the voters, enough voters pass it, right? You're not trying to change his position, right? And so if you can have a short conversation to get him to maybe change his own position, right, I think you can, you know, in a short way, right, you can organize and canvas. We're talking about 15, 20-minute conversations. One of the pieces of research I'm thinking about, it was about a mass, you know, canvassing, right, changing people's issues on transgender rights in Florida, right? 15-minute conversations showed, you know, with sometimes when somebody was transgender, sometimes somebody was not, right? Having a kind of very simple conversation based on empathy and experience, right, showed durable changes in transgender rights preferences and issues on ballot measures in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Which is amazing, right? And so maybe that works for housing, maybe it doesn't. We don't know. I'd have to do it again.
I mean, I guess,
find out, right? I think it's possible.
Akin to that, like, you know,
canvas the West Side.
Yeah, like when we're
yeah.
exactly when we're trying to build, like, if Mission's trying to build somewhere like Excelsior or the Sunset that has a typical anti, like, they hear affordable housing, they think projects, they think they know that they don't want it.
Right.
Like, the first thing I do is invite two or three of them to the Mission to, like, what I think is our best development. I don't even tell them that we're walking through an affordable housing development until we're right in the middle, and every single time someone says, oh man, this is really nice, I'd like to live here.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, well, actually, this is what we're going to build in your neighborhood, you know, and I, to see their faces, like, to see them
right.
know that, oh, I had the wrong idea about this.
And I was even going before that, is that you went to them, right, and you're trying to establish this rapport of a sense of, like, we're not your enemy, we want to be a part of your community,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you take them to the project.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
And so when housing developers do this all the time, you know, you talk to them, they go there, and they're often, you know, nice, they're open to compromise. I mean, I'm talking about market rate ones, right? They want to work with the community. They've learned how to do that. In some places it works, in other places it doesn't, right? But I think you're doing a version of that, which is like, we want to be a part of your community.
See,
because right?
I see. So this is my I have helped now. A lot of market rate developers, and I actually think they do this really, really badly. They use a lot, often they use triggering language in the wrong direction.
Right.
They put in stuff about, like, you know, I think that there, a lot of the materials that I've seen them give out are not saying personal stories, getting people to think differently about housing in general. It's in fact kind of like indulging their, like, we want you, the neighborhood,
to tell us
what
right.
to do, what not, and, like,
right.
it makes the neighbors think that what
it's
they should
power.
Be doing is
say,
deciding
total.
that they are going to be polled
yeah.
to get to decide what happens with that plot of land,
yeah.
rather than moving them to the point where they get, like,
mm-hmm.
think that housing's a
and
good
we,
idea.
But I don't understand
yeah.
why you
yeah.
do that, though. It's because they're trying to say, like, we're not coming here just to, like, stamp
yeah.
on you. Like, we want, you know, we want community input, right?
Though,
yeah,
though
I just think they
know.
End up doing long-term
yeah.
damage.
Though I
yeah.
will say that we... And clearly, we've to death, like, the amount of community outreach that I have to personally do has been a topic.
I think you do it better than most for-profit developers.
But I will say one thing that, thank you, one thing, I agree. One thing that we do start from, though, when we win a development is me and the director of the Mayor's Office of Housing go to the first community meeting, and the director of the Mayor's Office of Housing basically says, this is happening. You know, we're coming to the neighborhood. We can talk about what you'd like to see,
right.
but I feel like market rate developers kind of come in with a we
that.
Would like to, or we allowed
but
to.
Probably because they're actually in a different position. Right?
Yeah,
they
right.
Have,
it's
they
a good point.
Aren't necessarily gonna
yeah,
happen,
no, that's
right?
a that's a good point.
So,
yeah.
so they have to be like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, look, Laura, you can create a sideline business in advising communications for profit developers. Since you're already a shill, you know, for the developers, you might as well get paid. By
no,
them.
But the thing is that, like, they never listen to me actually because. I mean, this is the problem, right? They want to get their project through,
right.
and if they do long-term damage to the entire system, they don't, like, you know...
It's not their job to worry about
it's
that.
It's not their job to worry
right.
about that. And
their
so,
job,
like,
the thing is that you know, if they don't think that what they're doing necessarily is a political thing.
No, yeah.
And you know, they might be right in thinking about that, but and they shouldn't be thinking about it as political in the sense of one side or another, but rather the sense of the community, right? This is politics, and we creating a sense of identity attachment, like that we're one of you. Maybe that comes across as self-serving and like nobody will accept that. But I think if you try, at least, and I think a lot of them do, then down the line, maybe you'll have some sense of like, okay, we're not going to fight them. They're going to bring some stuff to us. They're going to help improve our neighborhood, maybe, right? But that only goes
so
far.
Yeah, I mean, I just see them, like, I mean, the strategies I see in, oh, man. Wait, are we taking a picture? I want to do...
Well, this was supposed to be a silent picture that I'm taking here.
No, 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 no.
I was trying to be a casual...
Here, get Joe to take it.
Lean in.
I'll
take a casual picture here.
This is not casual at all.
Well, I know it's not. You, Laura, made it not casual.
Yeah, because I hate how wrinkly.
Last time we took that picture, we had bunny ears headphones
on.
Oh
yeah.
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 I gotta.
Should we?
We've done an hour. So, round up final thoughts.
I just appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, thank you. That was a good conversation. I appreciate it. We'll see how many listeners we get before we get
back. Not a big drop.
You're a professor.
Thanks so much.
And shut up, Joe, for God's sake.